Please be seated. All right, we'll now call Jim Don McInally versus State of Texas. Mr. Brown.
Police Court. Counsel for the State. Your Honors, what this case is about, it's actually pretty simple. What happens one night on February 10th, 2007, about 2 in the morning, there's an officer. He's driving on 35W in Denton County, right up around 114. According to the officer, he sees a car driving in front of him. He says he sees the car drift back and forth out of its lane a little bit. And he says he sees what appears to be a lit cigarette thrown out of the driver's side window. So he initiates a traffic stop. On the record, he says he stopped appellant for two reasons: this failure to maintain a single lane and essentially littering. The officer, there's a video of this, which is kind of exciting because it's about 2 hours long, but it kind of can give you the whole flavor of what happens once the officer initiates his takedown lights. Once he stops the appellant, he walks up to the passenger side of the car and looks in, and according to the officer, he sees a box with a shirt tucked in it, and the box says hydrochloric acid. The officer also says he sees a bunch of paper matchbooks all over the car. Now, according to the officer, according to his training and experience, without any more detail about what that is, he thinks that these matchbooks, these backers of the matchbooks, the red phosphorus, is used in the manufacture of methamphetamine. So he gets the appellant out of the car, and he asks him if he can search the car. And the appellant says, no. Then the officer says, and you can hear all this on his video recorder, on the mic, he says, you're not free to leave. You stand right here. I'm going to go back to my car, and I'll be back with you in a little while. So the stop occurred at about 1:53 a.m. on the video. This last conversation, when the officer has now tried to get consent and can't get it, and he says, I'm going to go back to my car, I'm going to try to get a canine unit. That conversation occurs at 1:59 a.m. on the video marker, on the timer. You can then hear the officer in his car trying to get a canine unit to come out to this location. Now we're at 2 in the morning. A canine officer finally arrives at 3:12 a.m., so about an hour and 13 minutes after the part where the officer tells Mr. McInally he's not free to leave. The dog alerts on the car. Mr. McInally's placed under arrest. Subsequent search, there's under a gram of meth. I think it's like 0.41. So the issues in this case are, number one, is this a legal stop? And even if it is the continued detention reasonable to wait from 1:59 a.m. to 3:13 while a canine unit comes out? So as far as the stop's concerned, the officer conducts a lawful stop when he has reasonable suspicion to believe the person has violated the law. The burden's on the state to show that the officer had sufficient facts to create reasonable suspicion. Reasonable suspicion exists, as we all know from all the cases, if the officer has specific, articulable facts when combined with rational inferences drawn from those facts for that officer to believe that the person has, is, or soon will be engaging in criminal activity. Now, you consider the totality of the circumstances, and since his reasonable belief doesn't turn on credibility or demeanor, it's a de novo review. The failure to maintain a single lane, it's the appellant's position, that's probably the easier of the two to rule on. The statute indicates that a person has to drive within their lane, and they can't change lanes if it's unsafe. So as long as it's safe, you can change lanes, or you could drift in and out of your lane. The cases that are cited in our brief, page 14 to 15, the appellant's brief, I think there's five or six cases that are right on point on this. The officer indicates this was a drifting. There's no traffic out there. The officer indicates there's no traffic out there. So there's really no way that anything that Mr. McAnally did was unsafe. The second issue is this littering. The officer's testimony is that the appellant appeared to flick a lit cigarette out the window, and that's at the record, volume 2, page 132. So by the officer's own admission, he's unsure whether this happened or not. And when you think about in context of where this was and what's going on, it's 2 in the morning, it's a dark highway, this is a car in front of him, and so that's why he says he appeared to flick a lit cigarette. It's a conclusory statement. He doesn't give you any great detail about what he saw that made him think it was a lit cigarette. There's a case that Mr. Witten actually called me on earlier this week and said he was going to cite this case. It's Simmons v. State at 288 Southwest 3rd, 72. It's a Houston case from 2009, and petition was refused. In addition to the cases that I cite in my brief that I believe are on point, this case deals specifically with littering. And the Simmons case is very different and can give you some contrast to see when the officer's testimony is sufficient on littering in Simmons, when it's not in McAnally. The Simmons officer testified that he was on patrol in a known high crime area in Houston, and he sees Mr. Simmons standing in a moving lane of traffic. So he's a pedestrian, he's standing there, he's got a good view of him, and he sees Mr. Simmons throwing some paper down on the ground. So he takes all the facts that he knows, this high crime area, throwing things on the ground. He's got a clear view of Mr. Simmons standing there, and he approaches him. He detains him. There's further testimony in Simmons where the officer actually picked up the pieces of paper. It's a torn bus pass, so he confirms that it in fact was paper. It was litter. So you can contrast what Simmons says with what Officer Chase says, which is just, well, it appeared he threw a lit cigarette out of the window. You know, it could just as easily have been ash that he saw, which under the litter statute, ash is specifically excluded. It's not litter.
Well, isn't it true, though, Counselor, that the state is not required to prove that a violation occurred, only that there's reasonable suspicion? And wouldn't the appearance of a cigarette being flicked out the window qualify?
I agree with the first statement. That is true. The officer does not have to actually observe a violation. The officer just has to have reasonable suspicion based on what he sees that a violation has occurred. However, the court can conduct a review of exactly what the officer says on the record, what Officer Chase says he saw, and determine if, under an objective standard, if that is reasonable. So, and the appellant's position in this particular case, what the officer, the testimony on the record, does not rise to reasonable suspicion under the review that this court is charged to conduct. So it's the appellant's position the stop was not a valid, lawful stop, but then once the stop occurs, our next position is that even if it was a valid stop, it should have ended at 159. On the video, you see at 159, that's when the officer asks for consent, does not get consent. He has concluded the reason for his stop at that point. If he was stopping for failure, what he believed was failure to maintain a single lane or littering, at that point, he's found nothing that would give him any additional reason to continue the detention.
But he did find something else. He saw the hydrochloric acid in the matchbooks.
Exactly. And the officer says on the record that hydrochloric acid, in his opinion, is used for cleaning pools. That's what he says on the record. And the under the standard that the officer, if he sees articulable facts and circumstances that come to his attention during a routine traffic stop, if those give him reasonable suspicion or probable cause to believe there are narcotics in the car, then yes, there would be a reason for a continued detention. But without that reasonable suspicion, and again, it's as a standard that you, as the Court of Appeals, can review what this officer says on the record. You review it de novo and see, are the facts that he testified to, is that going to give an officer reasonable suspicion for continued detention? And just an officer saying, well, based on my training, matchbooks could be used for for making methamphetamine. There's no basis for his testimony of that. There's no support of that.
Well, was there a challenge made in the trial court to his testimony in that regard?
There was not, Your Honor. The trial attorney did not object, did not have a 705 hearing to see what to challenge his credibility on that issue, and that's not in the record. However, this court is allowed to, and it's similar if you look at this court's previous decision in McQuarters, where that officer says, well, this person was nervous and things along that line. There's also that testimony from Officer Chase here that Mr. McAnally was unkempt, he was ungroomed. And so we have similar type testimony as McQuarters, and therefore the appellant's position is that did not give him reasonable suspicion, and just a blanket statement. I mean, if an officer can say I think matchbooks are used to make methamphetamine, the officer could say anything. He could find a blanket in the back seat and say, well, I think that blankets are used to cover illegal aliens, so I'm going to detain you longer. I'm going to search your car. It's a blanket statement unsupported by any sort of training or other education on the part of this officer. In this reasonable, the length of the detention, what the cases will say is that Fourth Amendment reasonableness, you have to do a balance between serving the interests of the public so officers can investigate potential crimes against an individual's right to be free from arbitrary detentions and intrusions. And a case that gives some guidance is United States v. Place, which is cited in our brief, and that deals with when an individual, Mr. Place, was flying from Miami to LaGuardia, and when he got to LaGuardia, the federal agents there seized his luggage and they kept it for 90 minutes before they subjected it to a canine search. And so we have the problem in Mr. McAnally's case, the issue, is this a reasonable detention to have Mr. McAnally out there on the side of the road for an hour and 13 minutes while you wait for a canine to come when you've developed nothing other than he is unkempt, ungroomed, he's got some matchbooks in his car, and he's got a box that, in theory, that says hydrochloric acid.
But don't we have to measure the reasonableness of the duration, the continued duration of the stop, by whether or not that the officer was diligent in continuing to pursue a means of investigation?
I agree with that. That's the standard.
And then in Place, I think the distinction in that case was that the officers knew the time of the flight arrival, and they weren't ready. They weren't ready to go. They didn't have the canine officer out there ready to go. So that weighed against their diligence, which is distinguishable here because the officer wasn't riding around with a canine in his vehicle.
And I agree with that. The way Place lays that out is they say, in this case, this 90-minute delay is per se unreasonable. We're not going to say 90 minutes is the number, but we're going to say in this case, 90 minutes is unreasonable. Then the next sentence in Place is, additionally, because the officers could have planned ahead and had the dog there because they knew when the flight was going to land. So it's not necessarily just because the officer didn't plan ahead, but that was an additional factor. In this case, in Mr. McAnally's case, I believe it's important to watch the video and see how the officer behaves and see how Mr. McAnally behaves and see how long this, it's an hour and 13-minute delay.
I agree. It seems like a very long delay, and it seems, very much at the outside edge of what my experience, what I've seen just at the cases coming through here. But nonetheless, it seems like there's extensive case law saying that stops of 90 minutes waiting on a canine, as long as the officer is diligently pursuing getting a canine out there. I mean, it seems like there's just an awful lot of case law saying that that's not unreasonable.
I think in this case, what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to really look closely at what Officer Chase says. Okay, number one, is that reason for the detention to start with? And then weigh that against, okay, so now we've got these matchbooks, we've got this box, we've got a man who's unkempt or sleepy at 2 in the morning, and is an hour and 13 minutes going to be too long? And as an officer, if he is in fact a trained officer and he's patrolling 35 and he has experience in this, shouldn't he be required to potentially plan ahead as opposed to is this a common occurrence for Officer Chase, in other words? As a police officer, if you're patrolling a highway, it's certainly possible you could run into somebody and you might need a canine. Instead of waiting until you're confronted with that individual to plan ahead, how about you have some sort of contingency? You have an arrangement with some police departments. It's not complicated to make sure they have somebody on call who's closer than Fort Worth.
But there's really not anything in the record either way on that. That wasn't really developed, was it?
I agree, that was not developed, but that trying to answer your question.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mr. Whitten?
May it please the court, counsel. Where I want to begin here today, I think first is with the stop. I think that's where we have to start in this one. And whether the issue of whether it was justified, because if it wasn't justified, that's where we've got to start. Appellant's made some arguments here and in his brief that I think in the end tend to gloss over the analysis that you're going to have to do as you're deciding this case. And I think the state's position is going to be that, yes, it's simple, but the analysis is very, very important. Chase testified to two separate things with regard to that stop. When he was first asked, what drew your attention to this vehicle, he said failure to maintain single lane and littering. The first appearance of that in the record is on the second volume, 131, page 131, line 15. And he's unequivocal about it, and I think that's vitally important. Failure to maintain single lane and littering. And so as you evaluate this case and go through the analysis and you look at the record, you need to remember that Officer Chase, when it comes to the reasons that he pulled over the appellant, was always unequivocal. And I think the court touched on this a little while ago, but it wasn't necessary, of course, for the state to prove that these offenses actually occurred, but that Officer Chase had a reasonable suspicion and that the trial court could reasonably conclude that he had a reasonable suspicion. With regard to the failure to maintain single lane, Chase testified to, well, he saw it drift twice and that he saw it go off the shoulder. Now, he never explicitly used the words safe or unsafe, and the state recognizes that that's in the statute. However, he did testify that it appeared to him as though he may have been trying to exit where there wasn't a valid exit. And the state's position is that it's going to be a necessary import of that testimony that Officer Chase believed the movement to be unsafe. Now, he never came out and said unsafe, and I recognize that, but he did testify as to additional facts other than just leaving his lane. He testified as to what he saw and what it appeared to him the appellant was doing, that the state's position would be that he believed it was unsafe. Now, even if he didn't get there with failure to maintain single lane, and the state's position is that he did, we've got the cigarette issue. There is absolutely nothing in this record to indicate that Chase was unsure of what he saw. You will not find the word ashes anywhere in the record. And you will not find anywhere on direct examination, cross-examination, or when the appellant's counsel recalled him to go through the video, you will not find Officer Chase waffling or unequivocal, or just waffling in any case, about the reasons for the stop. He littered, and he said it. And he testified as to facts. He said, I saw what appeared to be a lit cigarette coming back, and he says it came back towards my car. And I think that it's unfair to Officer Chase, and I think it's also unfair to the trial court's determination of whether Officer Chase had a reasonable suspicion and whether the trial court could reasonably conclude that, to seize on one word that Officer Chase used one time, which was appear, because the record as a whole reflects that Chase was unequivocal. Before I get too far or on to the next thing, I do want to mention the Simmons case that I found last week that counsel brought up. That case was out of Houston. It's pretty new. The Court of Criminal Appeals has refused the petition. I want to address that. What it says was that the nature of littering, calls it illegal dumping, they're the same thing under the statute, does not require the officer to make a subjective determination, okay? And the court can decide on its own whether the officer's determination of whether an offense occurred was objectively reasonable without being presented a detailed account of the offense. So in other words, under that case law, Officer Chase was there with littering just by saying, I saw him littering and saw a cigarette coming out the window. He didn't even need to provide the additional detail of, well, I saw it coming back towards my car. And so he gets there under that case. I think he satisfies either version, objective or subjective, but under that case law, being objective was good enough. Before I move on to the continued detention issue, are there any questions about the stop from the court?
Okay. Are there any other cases that you're aware of where reasonable suspicion was found based on just throwing something out a window?
I did some searches for littering. I did some searches specifically under this health and safety code statute, and, Your Honor, I'm not aware of anything other than this Houston case where the officer saw the appellant in that case littering pieces of paper on the street. But that being said, I think that Officer Chase clearly saw what meets the definition of this statute here, which is a cigarette flying out the window. With regard to the continued detention, I think there's two things we have to keep in mind, and I think this is where the analysis gets really important. Facts that come to the officer's attention during the course of the stop can be used for reasonable suspicion. And number two, the Supreme Court and our Court of Criminal Appeals say that there's not a bright line time limit on investigative detentions. So it's a factor, and the state recognizes that it's a huge factor, and the state recognizes also that an hour and 13 minutes is a very significant period of time. But on these facts, it was justified. As soon as Chase flipped on his lights on his car to pull over the appellant, the first thing he testified to was, look, the appellant took a little bit longer than normal to pull over, based on his training and experience, which, by the way, Officer Chase is certainly entitled to testify based on his training and experience. There is mention in the record of what some of his training experiences were. He's been, at this time, a police officer for 5 years. He testified, and I wish I could remember exactly where it is in the record, but I know it's in the record that he said he's experienced with narcotics investigations. And so he's certainly entitled, in this case, to testify based on his training experience, 5 years as a police officer and with narcotics investigations. But as soon as he pulls over, the appellant takes longer than normal to pull over. As Officer Chase is walking towards the vehicle, he testified, I saw something going on in that front seat that was out of the ordinary. It appeared the appellant was digging through something or something like that. And as soon as he walked up to the passenger side window, it struck him. The first thing he saw was a box labeled hydrochloric acid, which, based on his training experience as a narcotics police officer, he knew to be used in the making of methamphetamines. He saw all these matchbooks, and the defendant had bloodshot, glassy eyes. He appeared strung out. I mean, Officer Chase went as far as to say the appellant appeared strung out. So as soon as he got there, in this case, he had reasonable suspicion that something other than failing to maintain a single lane or littering was going on. There was something else going on. And what he testified to was he suspected methamphetamine use, or methamphetamines were in the car. So at that point, he's got reasonable suspicion, which brings us to the next question. And the question is not, how long did it take to get a canine unit out there? The question I think that this court is going to have to resolve is, and this is what the case law says, did Officer Chase act diligently in using the least restrictive method that he had available to him at that time to confirm or dispel the reasonable suspicion he had that there were narcotics in that vehicle? Okay? And when you ask that question, the state's position is that the stop becomes eminently reasonable. The stop started at 1:53, I believe, according to the tape, and it's 6 minutes later, only 6 minutes later, where Officer Chase begins his efforts after he's got this additional reasonable suspicion. It's only 6 minutes until Officer Chase begins his efforts to get a canine unit out there. Now, it's vitally important to remember here that it is 2 a.m. in rural Denton County with a small police department in Northlake. And he was using his best efforts at that point with what he had available to him to confirm or dispel his reasonable suspicion.
How do we weigh the gaps in the audio?
There's some testimony in the record, and I believe that appellant's trial counsel cross-examined Chase on this point. And I believe that Chase testified, when I get in and out of my car, I sometimes turn it on and off. I would agree with you that the quality of the audio on this tape and even the video is not the best. But I believe Officer Chase testified that as a matter of course, he often turns off his body mic as he gets in and out of his car. There may have been some additional testimony on that, but that's what I remember.
I'm just asking how that weighs in our analysis. Well, diligence, because we evidently haven't heard everything that there is to hear.
Well, I don't think that there would be anything in the record to say that Officer Chase was somehow acting untoward in this case, or that he was employing some kind of dilatory tactic here with regard to the impellent's, you know, constitutional right to be free from some kind of unreasonable detention. I don't think that there's anything in the record to support that. I think that when he was asked the question about the mic, he really just said, look, as a matter of course, I turn it on and off. It makes a lot of noise when I get in and out of my vehicle. But I'll agree that the audio is not the best. I wish we had more to go on. In any event, he gets in his car, and he immediately begins looking for a canine unit, which to him, at that point, was going to be the least restrictive method. Unfortunately, it took him several phone calls, several radio calls, before he finally gets a hold of Fort Worth PD, who dispatches a canine unit that doesn't get there till after 3 o'clock. But the question isn't how long did it take the canine unit to get there. The question is, did Officer Chase act diligently? And he did. He wasn't just sitting there twiddling his thumbs this whole time. He's looking for a dog. And unfortunately, it just took him a little while under those circumstances to get one dispatched.
Does the record reflect, does the audio reflect how many different places he called?
It, like we've discussed, it's spotty. He testified, though, when he was first on the stand, that he tried to first radio his department, I believe, and then he made some phone calls. Got one call back from an officer, said, sorry, I'm off duty at this point. But the audio on the tape is more difficult. I'll agree.
At what point on the tape did he confirm that Fort Worth was on its way?
What his testimony is 2:26 a.m.
So do you think that's diligent, waiting for almost an hour, for 45 minutes?
I don't think
he should have called somewhere else.
I think that once he got in the car and began making every effort he could, you know, it's it's some time before he ever gets to the point of having one, and it's 2:26 a.m. It's already been some time he's been acting diligently there. And I think that once he's got one out there, he's satisfied what he needed to do. That was clearly going to be the only one he could have gotten out there, I think. Now, I'm obviously arguing outside the record there, but based on what is in the record, difficult to say that he would have been able to get anything else. I see that I'm almost out of time. I do want to mention the Place case just very quickly, and I believe that Your Honor mentioned it. It's entirely distinguishable here because the authorities in that case had advance notice that that person was going to be showing up. And here, it's very important to remember that Chase, this is out on patrol. He has no notice. He walks up on this car for what he thinks is a littering offense and instead ends up doing a narcotics investigation. In summary, the stop was good. There was reasonable suspicion because of the failure to maintain single lane offense with additional facts about unsafe, even though he didn't specifically use the words unsafe. And I see I'm out of time. Are there any more questions?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. The state would pray for affirmance.
Thank you, Mr. Whitten. Mr. Brown, rebuttal.
The only point I really want to talk about is what Justice Walker was just talking about that brought up. I would disagree with Mr. Whitten that the time is not a factor to be considered. I think when you consider whether the officer was diligent, you look at certainly his actions on the front end and his beginning to make phone calls, whether you can hear what he said on the audio or whether he testified regarding it. But once the time starts ticking along and it is 2:30, 2:45, and it's about 40 degrees and windy out there, and he's got Mr. McAnally standing out there, a citizen who the Supreme Court recognizes that's the interest we have to balance against our the public service interest, then the time is a factor, and how long that takes factors into whether he was truly diligent or not, and him just not making any additional phone calls. The appellant's position is that shows that he did not act diligently enough, and so the detention was unreasonable.
So it's really not so, though, so much how long it took for the canine unit to arrive as it is what actions the officer took during that period of time to look for other alternatives. Obviously, the arrival of the canine unit was outside the officer's control, as far as we know. Is our focus really on the amount of time, or is it on the actions of the officer getting a canine unit or some other alternative?
I think in this instance, they're interrelated, because obviously, if he gets a hold of a canine unit and the canine unit gets there in 5 or 10 minutes, we're not having this conversation. But as the time drags on and he's not taking any additional action, so those two factors go together. His actions plus the time are part of the analysis of whether he was truly diligent or not.
So there was the last phone call made to the Fort Worth Police Department, and then an hour or so elapses from that, and within that period of time there were no other phone calls, hey, what's taking you so long, or anything like that. I mean, that's what you're saying, that arguably might show
lack of
diligence.
Yeah,
the fact that he just didn't follow up and
or look for alternative means to secure a canine unit. If there are any other questions, obviously the appellant is requesting a reversal.
Thank you, Mr. Brown, Mr. Whitten. We appreciate both of you appearing here this morning to present your arguments. The case is submitted, and since we have no other cases to hear today, we'll ask clerk to adjourn us. Thank you.